Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. We kick off this lovely Thursday with a weird law. This one doesn't come to you courtesy of the United States because they seem to have the bulk of those laws. It comes to you courtesy of France. In the small town of Sarre-Pourin in France, there is a strict law against dying within the town limits. This law dates back to 2008, and the reason behind that is that the overcrowding in the town makes it very difficult to find you a spot in the cemetery. Now, this is, of course, an exception to the law. You are permitted to pass away within the town limits if you have previously secured a spot to be buried in the local cemetery. That's the weird law, courtesy of the nation of France. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, proudly brought to you by Volvo. And on the show today, we take a look at the latest calls by Business Leadership South Africa, as well as Business Unity South Africa, that Eskom drop the Nersa lawsuits that we spoke about last week relating to those trading licenses that Nersa had looked to approve, those six new licenses. Then we take a look at the developments out of Standard Bank. They wish to keep consumers aware of the filing scams to look out for this tax filing season. And then we also take a look at the huff and puff around the new Trump tariffs. We see if we can make sense of what is finally going to happen for South Africa there. We speak to Annabelle Bishop of Investec around that. And then we take a look at South African breweries celebrating their retailers. And we wrap up the show with the Small Business of the Week. We have our SME of the Week feature. This week's small business is a company called The Mushroom Box. Stick around to find out what it is that they do.
This program is powered by Volvo Plug-in Hybrids. You've upgraded everything else in your life, so isn't it time your car caught up too? It's safe to be brave with Volvo.
We kick off the show with a sense of how the markets have moved throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by investment analyst at Anchor Capital, Robbie Proctor, to take a look at market movements. Robbie, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Positive day for the Aussie, still closing above 100,000 points there, and resources benefiting largely off the back of positive commodity prices. But the Rand also doing really well. Seemingly, from a South African perspective, we're okay. We're doing okay.
Yeah. Good evening, Jimmy. It's certainly been, it continues to be a tumultuous environment. But I think the JSE continues to benefit from having a high weighting in precious metals between the gold and platinum miners. They're certainly doing the heavy lifting on our domestic market.
And we know that weighting can also be to the detriment of the JSE. If I think back to a couple of weeks ago when the commodities prices were a little more on the depressed side of things, we did see that our local bourse was feeling the brunt of that. But by and large, I mean, if I'm looking at industrials as well, doing well on the day, the local markets actually holding their own despite the sentiment that is out there around the world. As you said, tumultuous times is what we find ourselves in, and markets are in some parts uncertain around where we go to from here, but we're still optimistic. I suppose the JSE is still trading relatively close to all-time highs, if not at all-time highs, and that is very telling this far into the year.
Yes, certainly, and I think it's telling just how much external factors beyond our borders matter in terms of the currency. I mean, you know, we can attribute the Rand strength over this last week, I mean, purely to the U.S. jobs data that came out last Friday. So weakness there is seen as giving the Fed a bit more room to cut rates quicker. And that certainly has fed through into our currency. Unfortunately, not so much into our retailers today and broadly over the last few months. But we're confident that, you know, the general macro tailwinds, which remain centered around a stronger rand, reduced oil prices, lower interest rates, I mean, generally remain supportive for our retailers, and their numbers are still showing decent growth despite a still tepid economic backdrop.
Robbie, let's look at some of the performers of the day. I noted that we got some updates from some of our companies. MTN gave us an update, a trading update on their performance. Have they recovered in that Nigerian business? How are they faring?
Yeah, I think Nigeria has been key to their recovery, and it is generally key to the overall business's performance. So, I mean, what we've had, over the last 18 months is some sort of stability of the Naira, and broadly sort of stability in some of the key African operating currencies like the Ghanaian cedi. When you couple that with, during the sort of peak impact of Naira depreciation against the dollar, I think the company did really well to renegotiate some of its US dollar-based tower leases. So not only is it now looking in a better position from a forex perspective, but its expenses in Nigeria are more aligned to its sort of local country revenue as opposed to US dollars, which can be very onerous when it goes the wrong way. So overall, yeah, a pretty dramatic recovery in earnings from the MTN group from where they were a year to 18 months ago. So yeah, certainly when the African tide is lifting, certainly MTN's one of the key beneficiaries there.
Robbie, let's move to the Foschini group. They also gave us a similar update around their performance. Anything stand out to you there?
I think broadly across the industry, I mean, we saw it in Mr. Price's update as well, is that June seems to have been a quite a quiet month, particularly amongst clothing and footwear retailers. But I mean, that's largely to do with the timing of winter. Last year, winter pretty much only arrived in about June, and that was reflected in a pretty sharp jump in overall retail sales in that month. So I think that's sort of taken the shine off of what has generally been a good sort of 3 or 4 months for our retailers, for Foschini in the South African division, at least growing 5% for their sort of first quarter to the end of June. And then in July, which is encouraging, growth stepped back up to about 9%. So I guess you are looking to head into the second half of this calendar year, which does have the benefits of the two pot withdrawals from last year. And we did see a resultant uptick in retail sales and vehicle sales. So I think the market's a bit skeptical at this point whether our retailers can exceed what is a more challenging base in the second half of the year.
Robbie, let's wrap things up with a look at the update from the team at Exxaro. They announced that, this is seemingly a minor update, that Coronation had increased its stake in Exxaro to just north of 5%. I suppose from an asset management point of view, and you and the team at Anchor Capital can weigh in on this, is this the time to kind of be getting into some of the commodities? I know a lot of the guys have been upset about missing some of the commodity cycle. Is there still wind left in that?
Certainly, I think on a targeted basis, for sure. I mean, Exxaro is a bit of a different beast in that, a decent chunk of its revenue and profits come from sort of fixed price contracts from Eskom. So they do tend to offer a bit more stability than a coal miner like Thungela, for instance, that's at the mercy of sort of market-based pricing. But I think from Exxaro's perspective, you either, after they made the bid for the manganese assets, I think a lot of the investment case going forward is around manganese exposure. So at the moment, I think we're quite neutral on manganese, but certainly Exxaro, from both a valuation perspective, trading in sort of a mid-single digit PE range, generates substantial cash from its investment in Sishen Iron Ore Company, one of Kumba's mines. And I think for Coronation generally, it will be a reasonably small position in their lives.
Well, we'll see what they continue to do from that perspective, whether they add to the position, whether they leave it as it is. But for now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Robbie, thanks so much for those insights and for the time. Robbie Proctor, investment analyst at Anchor Capital, on market movements as well as some SENS announcements from some companies.
I think it's time for an adventure. We could visit the grandkids. check on a London apartment while we're there. Or we could meet them in Dubai and look at properties along the way.
Ah, why settle in one place when you can be a global citizen? If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect your global banking, lending and investments on a single platform. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
In business, you need more than banking. You need a partner that moves at your speed and understands your industry. At Absa Business Banking, we get it.
And we're taking a look at the latest calls by Business Leadership South Africa, as well as Business Unity South Africa, that the government urgently intervene in the Eskom attempts that are taking place in court. If you remember, last week we covered the story that NERSA had granted the five trading licenses that Eskom had felt should not have been granted, and Eskom had decided to take this matter to court. The team at BLSA, Business Leadership South Africa, as well as Business Unity South Africa, have called for the government to intervene to say that Eskom should drop this particular case. And of course, we're going to take a look at their reasoning behind that. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Executive Officer of Business Leadership South Africa, Busi Mavuso, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Me Mavuso, always lovely having you on the show. Happy Women's Month. I don't think I've spoken to you this month thus far. Strange call from Eskom to go this route anyway, because Eskom, from what we understood, as far as we thought back as part of the roadmap of unbundling Eskom, we were wanting to make the space more accessible. So from a business leadership perspective, I mean, I can imagine you're just as surprised that they would decide to want licenses to be stopped.
Absolutely, Jimmy, and thank you very much for the well wishes for Women's Month. So, Jimmy, I think this is totally unacceptable. I think government and the minister really need to intervene, because remember, the unbundling of Eskom, the opening up of the industries, the very reform agenda is government's stated policy. So Eskom cannot, therefore, you know, seek to undermine that. And when you look at the reasons that they are advancing, they are actually saying that these private traders are actually going to take their customers away from them. They are poaching their customers. What did they think was happening, Jimmy, when we decided as a country that we're embarking on the reform agenda? This is totally unacceptable. Remember, we actually have about 1.3 trillion rands worth of generation investment pipeline that is currently underway. What are those investors supposed to do with those projects if Eskom now is going to the courts to try and actually stop, you know, these traders from actually trading? It doesn't make sense, because we stood on podiums as a country. We said we're opening up some of the industries in the country. We are calling for investors. We want to ensure that we can have energy security in this country. And the reason, by the way, that structural load shedding is over in this country, the reason why supply now meets demand is precisely because of these private traders who have ensured that they plug the 6 gigawatts gap. And now that that has been done, Eskom now is actually coming up with these tactics. It really doesn't, you know. I'm worried, Jimmy, that imagine what the credit rating agencies are actually going to say the next time they actually assess us. Remember, the reason the sub-investment grade that we're in came about, the credit rating agencies were actually saying that you need to accelerate the structural reform agenda. We are worried that the reform agenda is not coming on quickly enough. The reason why Transnet was downgraded just about a month ago by Fitch, or was it S&P, they're actually saying that your reforms are not being implemented quickly enough. So do we then have a chance as a country to get out of the sub-investment grade if Eskom is now actually undermining, you know, the very progress that the country has made?
Could Eskom have miscalculated things? I mean, Eskom at some point said, well, we can't keep up with the pressure that's on the grid, and therefore we need private investment, we need this sort of thing, and we were open to splitting up the business. And when they then realized that perhaps they should have cleared some of their debt before agreeing to this, could that have been part of the reason as to why this happened? Regardless of the reason, I don't think wanting to keep the sector closed
Absolutely.
Really justifies anything.
Absolutely. It doesn't justify anything. But even if the problem is that they are currently producing a product that they are not being paid for, which is absolutely correct, you know, the issue of municipalities is a serious one. And government actually needs to deal with it. You know, I remember at the time when I was at the Eskom board, when we as the board tried to come down hard on municipalities, we were told by the shareholder that it's not politically palatable. So it's a mess of government to deal with, Jimmy. It cannot therefore, you know, have an impact on the market. It cannot be the problem of these private traders. When you look at it, Eskom, municipalities and whoever is in the value chain of Eskom, City Power and whatever other entities, all those have the same shareholder. So they must sit and have a family meeting, you know, and discuss this amongst themselves to say, now that there's other competitors and the market has been opened up, your action as municipalities and the City Power is undermining Eskom's ability to can effectively compete. I mean, this is tantamount to Standard Bank going to sue First National Bank because they are saying that, you know, you actually poaching our customers. We deal with this in business every day. This is what competition means. If someone is actually doing better and poaching your customers, Jimmy, you innovate. You bring in efficiencies. You know, you pull out all the stops. You bring in the technology to can actually make your business better. Now, if you have been protected for more than 130 years, where you actually didn't have to think far and deep enough, you know, to think about ways of actually ensuring that you can have customer satisfaction, this is precisely what happens. But I'm really worried that everything that we're doing as a country is going to be undermined. This is the very same entity that cost this country a billion rands a day, every day when we had stage 6 load shedding, just, you know, about 12 months ago. You know, this is the same company that has led to the decimation of many jobs in this country. This is the very same company that has led to businesses being shut down because they couldn't keep the lights on. Private sector comes in, they solve the problem. Now they are going to the courts and saying these private traders should not be allowed to trade. Very dangerous territory, Jimmy, that we're actually, you know, on at the moment. And government and the ministers actually have to seriously intervene. This can't be allowed to continue. It's utter madness.
Government certainly has to intervene, but I think the overriding business lesson there is something very, very well articulated by Memavuso as I let her go, and it is that if your competitor is offering a product and you want to stay in the market, simply come up with a better offering. Eskom is capable of doing this, and maybe that's what they should be focusing on. We'll leave this conversation on that note. Memavuso, thank you so much for those insights and for the time. Busi Mavuso, Chief Executive Officer of Business Leadership South Africa, on their stance around wanting Eskom to drop the lawsuit they have filed against NERSA regarding those additional trading licenses that NERSA had approved that Eskom didn't agree with.
In business, you need more than banking. You need deep sector expertise and personalized partnerships that take you further. At Absa Business Banking, we get it. In business, the pace doesn't slow when pressure hits. Whether you're plating up at peak hour, tables packed, orders piling, we've got to move faster, or racing to meet a deadline.
Truck held at the border.
Client needs answers.
You need more than banking. You need flexible funding, real-world tools, and sector expertise that shows up when it counts. At Absa Business Banking, we get it. Because your story matters. Absa is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, proudly brought to you by Volvo. It's safe to be brave with Volvo.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. And as we are in a tax season, or as we are wrapping up some of the events of a tax season, the team at Standard Bank has noted that some individuals might be falling victims to more and more tax filing season scams, and they want to caution us against that, because it is important to remember that for as long as these scams continue, we as the South African public would be anything but we would only be the victims of these. I'm joined on the line by the head of fraud risk management at Standard Bank, Advocate Athali Khan, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Advocate Khan, lovely to have you on the show. It's been a while. Why are we seeing the surge in the scams? Is it because it's tax season? I can't imagine that scammers would have a calendar around when is the most opportune time to be scamming people.
Good evening, and thank you for having me. I think you make such a valid point, but I think more than ever, fraudsters know exactly what's happening in terms of our calendar, whether it's your seasonal calendars for holidays, etc. Right now, they know that it's tax season. This gives them the opportune time to scam people because it gives them the perfect cover. People expect SARS or South African Revenue Services to send you communication, and this allows fraudsters to slide in with fake messages that look just legit. And because it's so legit, it fools you and even the most sharpest person because they're expecting something during this period.
Advocate Khan, sometimes it's not even about fooling you. It's just the plain fear. I mean, SARS has ruled South Africa with an iron fist forever. And I mean, anyone getting a message from SARS that says, hey, you owe us money, that instills fear in even the toughest of people. I can imagine that's part of what these scammers are relying on as well, is that because it is the institution that is the revenue services, that it adds that element of fear to, okay, I must respond.
Yes, you're absolutely spot on. Scammers use fear and official looking tactics to actually intimidate you as a customer or as a client, because they know that this is how the receiver, you know, the type of feelings it instills inside a person when they see a message from the receiver. So they use this and they create intimidating calls. They pretend to be law enforcement, or they go on to a full Hollywood type of persona to scare people into paying money fast. So this is the, you know, one of the things that fraudsters always do. They create fear, and in that fear, they try to push you to make payments.
But they're also getting smarter. I mean, I happen to, every now and then, I do this exercise where I go through my own spam folders across all of the email accounts and all that sort of thing. And I found one the other day addressed to me in German. The entire email was written in German, but my name was still written there, and there were some South African websites that were referenced that were legitimate and all those sorts of things. Can we just look at that as well from a digital perspective around the techniques that are being used and the things you should never be doing? I mean, simple things like clicking on anything in an email.
So to your point, the digital trap is very real. They're utilizing the most aggressive forms of AI, artificial intelligence, to create these type of mails. So whether it's a phishing email or a smishing text or even quishing, which is QR codes, these scams are designed to steal your login details or infect your device. Just one click and then you are compromised. So they use all of these services that is provided online, and with the way that technology is evolving, this has become something that they utilize more and more.
Advocate Khan, you mentioned the techniques that are being used there, and you said just one click and your information is compromised. What do I do if I click? How do I? So I happen to open an email. I've accidentally clicked. I didn't intend to do it. Now I'm afraid that my information might be compromised. What do I do?
I know it's unrealistic to ask this of people, but try not to panic, because this is exactly what the fraudsters are looking for you to do. But you need to act fast. You need to report the fraud, either freeze your accounts, contact your bank's fraud line immediately. Standard Bank can assist and may help you with trying to secure the funds if the funds is being paid out of your account. But the quicker you act, the quicker we can get onto that investigation and assist the client. But it's so important to act fast.
Some of the banks, and I appreciate this about what we've or how far we've come in terms of digital advancements. I know Standard Bank does this because I've seen it on the Standard Bank platform, is verifying accounts. Can we just go through the importance of that? Because for Standard Bank to have something like the South African Revenue Services listed as a public beneficiary, I know Standard Bank definitely has that. That means then that the account that the money is going to be transferred into is a verified and a valid account. Let's go through the importance of only paying into accounts that you're actually aware of.
It's so important. We call the service account verification services, which means that if you are going to make a payment to the South African receiver or any other big company that is listed, we actually have a service that once you put that account number in, you can verify and validate that account number. And if you're not sure when it comes back as something that might be suspicious or that we don't recognize, we strongly suggest that the client always confirms this account number with the institution that they're paying. It is so important, but the service is available. It's available for most banks, and it's such an easy service to use.
Advocate Khan, before I let you go, what are some of the easy red flags to pick up on? I mean, for me, I think of things like if an email address doesn't make sense, if it doesn't end in the right suffixes, so .gov.za for government institutions and that sort of thing. But what are some of the easy red flags when you get an email that looks legitimate? How do you just start to sift through that?
The first thing is to look at the spelling. It's so important. The second thing is they generally use email addresses, the Hotmail, et cetera, those type of email addresses, which is not, what normal big companies would utilize. Customers should always stop and think and double check that the sender or the email or the sender or the email that they're receiving is actually the person that they know or the company that they know. You can always check this online as well. There's so many sites. What most people do is they actually go and Google the site, and on that site, there's always comments of clients who've either been defrauded by that by that so-called scammer, or by companies that are not legitimate. So those are and also if something doesn't feel right, know that your instincts is telling you something is wrong. Stop immediately, check, verify, and validate always.
Verify, validate, act fast when you need to, but most of all, don't panic and do your homework. It's difficult to help you if you aren't willing to help yourselves, folks. This is why these scams continue to happen, is just do a little bit of research to make sure that you don't fall victim to these scams and you don't pay money into the wrong people. We'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Advocate Khan. That was Advocate Athali Khan, who is the head of fraud risk management at Standard Bank, joining us to take a look at the increase in tax scams during this tax season. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Remember when you had to hurry up and wait, and cars could only run on fossil fuels? Well, hurry up and catch up. You don't need diesel power. You just need a second electric motor. With Volvo plug-in hybrids, you can drive electric in the city, switch to fuel for the long haul, or combine both when you want it all. So what are you waiting for? You're late for your test drive. It's safe to be brave with Volvo.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we're unpacking the tariff conversation, well, at least what's seemingly left of it, and the implications it would have on South Africa at this stage. I'm joined on the line by the chief economist at Investec, Annabel Bishop, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Annabel, lovely to have you on the show. A happy Women's Month to you as we kick off the month. I think it's going to be a great month, even though we've made all this huff and puff and fuss around doomsday tariffs, and we've been trying to figure out how we get around the situation. I had a look at the markets today. Seemingly, South African markets have all but shrugged off as much of this as they can.
Yes, hi, and thank you for the greeting, especially around Women's Month. Look, I think, the key point really for us in South Africa is that there's actually quite a few different parts to it. Not only are the exports to the US 7.5% of our total exports, so it's not a large part, but also, of course, as well, the key point here is that, close to 40% actually have zero tariffs. Now, furthermore, we actually have seen already a 25% tariff on motor vehicles since April. So you can see how there's almost been a staggered approach. Of course, June has seen impact on tariffs on steel, aluminium. So overall, you know, while there is uncertainty, and of course we're not too sure how the negotiations will go for South Africa with the US going forwards, if we will manage to bring our tariffs down further, the bottom line really is that there has been a number of different things going on. And of course, you know, for South Africa, the biggest issue really for us from a trade perspective is actually to be able to get more goods out the country by repairing our freight crisis.
Annabel, when we look at the South African picture and we look at where we stand, I mean, I want to draw on examples like India and Lesotho, because they might seem like extreme examples, but they speak to what we're dealing with in the White House, in that Lesotho overnight went from 50% to 15%, and then India went from 25% to 50%. And some of the reasoning and the rationale as to why the tariff adjustments are happening have now veered away from it is to address the trade deficit. And it now seems like it is to drive home a particular message, or it is to punish people for taking a certain stance in the case of India. Is that something South Africa should be worried about? Because we've very clearly been told by the White House and by Washington that they're not happy with South Africa.
Yes, I suppose, you know, 15% that Lesotho has, virtually all countries in Africa now have 15%, South Africa being an exception. Of course, as well, you know, we also see Brazil, which was having great issues with the US and vice versa, suddenly now getting 10%. So as you say, it's been quite volatile. And of course, you know, that obviously includes what's happening with India as well. You know, if we look forwards, yes, there's more to it than just trade policy, more to it than just the United States trying to export more. And in fact, onshore, they're looking to increase their manufacturing production base. They're looking to obviously provide more jobs and, of course, boost their economy. So all of that, you know, is part and parcel of the trade policy. But you're quite right when you mention the foreign policy aspect as well. And of course, around that, we saw the start of this year. In the first quarter, we actually saw tariffs aimed at countries, Mexico and, of course, Canada being key examples, to try and control the flood of what they termed illegal aliens and drugs into the US. And, of course, there's been many other factors since then. You know, this trade policy really came in only in April. You know, it was paused for 90 days, saw a further pause, but that's really something that's mainly been running through the second quarter and now into the third quarter. So, yes, you're quite right. You know, the US is addressing a lot of different issues and, of course, you know, a lot of different issues it takes with other countries. So it is difficult for it to try and control what other countries do. You know, of course, as well, that it's looking at the at Russia and, of course, you know, obviously concerns around the Middle East. So all of those have factored into its commentary and, of course, its trade policy, sanctions, etc. But, you know, for South Africa, we obviously have come up against it from a number of issues as well. And I think this is just all part of what is making the geopolitical environment uncertain and, of course, which is bringing some concern in terms of what is happening globally with security, but also, of course, as well with trade. You're right that financial markets have shrugged this off because it's been well announced, you know, ahead of time, these tariffs. But what financial markets are going to be looking for instead, and, you know, this doesn't mean that it's a non-event. What we're going to start to see is a focus on US economic indicators, you know, what happens in terms of the inflation and economic growth, and, of course, what happens around the world. And that's when you'll start to see markets react if there's negative outcomes.
Annabel, is it all doom and gloom for South Africa? Our president has seemingly struggled to hear or to get a favorable ear out of President Trump. We've seen that our own Department of International Relations, our own Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, they haven't really been able to get the resolution that South Africa would like out of this up to this point. Is South Africa right to be concerned? Are South Africans right to be worried about things like jobs and the ripple effects of tariffs? Or is there still hope for us?
So I think, you know, there's always a concern, and especially if you look at the Eastern Cape, where a lot of motor vehicle production occurs, you know, motor vehicle exports, machinery equipment, that category is our second largest export to the US. It accounts for about 20% of goods going to the US. So, of course, there's worries around that. What happens in terms of jobs, but in particular as well, you know, foreign companies which have come in to operate in South Africa, such as Daimler Chrysler, producing Mercedes-Benz, the concern there is, you know, is this going to be too much this uncompetitive 30% tariff compared to other places? Were they not onshore into the US and perhaps rather produce the cars there or, you know, elsewhere? So all of that does create these worries around jobs. And I think it's quite right to be concerned. South Africa's economy is so weak, running at 0.5% growth last year. And, you know, the concern is that this impact from the tariffs might take between 0.1% and 0.2% of economic growth, which was expected at 0.9% for this year. All in all, you know, it is always a concern. You know, jobs and livelihoods is a worry. South Africa has a very high unemployment rate, well above 30%. South Africa needs to be creating a lot more jobs, not losing them. So these, of course, all are part and parcel of the concerns that we're seeing now. And that's why, you know, it's not being discounted, even though the exports are such a small amount. The fact that we could lose jobs and, of course, as well, industries, you know, companies operating in industries, that's a big concern. So all of these factors, you know, really do matter. And South Africa obviously is looking to diversify. We're looking to find other markets for our goods. But, you know, the global trade markets are quite saturated, especially for very large expensive items like motor vehicles. It's easier to shift cheaper items such as fruit and vegetables. And of course, as well, you know, we need to look at where those goods go to. So particularly for us, manufactured goods often going into Europe. Are we able to get more in there? Well, of course, then you worry about CBAM. And that's obviously carbon emissions. When we obviously produce, when we manufacture, Eskom is 90% fossil fuels. So there could obviously be what's almost like tariffs as well coming from that area in the in Europe, particularly against goods exported there from South Africa.
We have much to be concerned about, and hopefully we can come to a resolution that doesn't cause South Africans any more agony than we are already going through in some respects. We'll leave this conversation on that note. Annabel, thanks so much for those insights. Always lovely having you on the show. Annabel Bishop, Chief Economist at Investec, joining us to take a look at the tariff implications for South Africa and perhaps some of the other countries.
Remember when you had to hurry up and wait, and cars could only run on fossil fuels? Well, hurry up and catch up. You don't need diesel power, you just need a second electric motor. With Volvo plug-in hybrids, you can drive electric in the city, switch to fuel for the long haul, or combine both when you want it all. So what are you waiting for? You're late for your test drive. It's safe to be brave with Volvo.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. So earlier this week, the team at South African Breweries held a unique event at their headquarters celebrating their retailers as part of their ecosystem. Now, this is part of the ongoing celebrations that SAB has been embarking on for this year, celebrating 130 years of SAB in South Africa and the work that they've done in South African communities. We're going to take a look at some of that and try and see what lies ahead for the business that is 130 years old. I'm joined on the line by the Vice President of Sales at SAB, Yaku Pereira, to take a look at this. Yaku, lovely having you on the show. The event that took place earlier in the week, can you take us through just some details around that event and why SAB felt it important to have this event?
Thanks very much, Jimmy. We had a beautiful event yesterday at SAB Breweries head office in Bryanston. The main idea around the event was to cheer our retailers, you know, and because it's our 130-year birthday, as a company, we decided to have a beautiful event where we basically invited some of our taverners that's extremely compliant on their liquor laws, which are examples for the rest of our trade to ensure that we trade responsibly. So we did a lot of work around that, and we rewarded some of our customers that's done very good work on that. We flew them down to Bryanston from all over the country, and we just had a wonderful day with our customers to celebrate, you know, their work they do for us, you know, their support to us. You know, if we don't collaborate, we can't make this thing a success. And that's basically what it was about. But, I mean, this year is about the 130 years birthday for SAB, South African Breweries, and we're all extremely very proud and excited about it.
Speaking of 130 years, Yaku, you've been at SAB for more than 20 years yourself. Take me through just what yesterday meant, looking at all of the retailers that some of whom may have started out when you started at SAB, some may have been there longer, some may be new, just to see all of those retailers come together and share just some of the impact that SAB has had on their businesses. Take me through just some of the stories that stood out for you with those conversations and what it meant for the business.
Yeah, Jimmy, you know, it's quite exciting for me myself as well. I'm tomorrow I'll be 24 years in the company. This company has given me a lot, so I'm always very passionate about it. I really love it. You know, the retailers are the lifeline of our business. You know, Avia moves through our retailers. They're a critical part of our business. And we have a vision to lead and grow our, the beer category responsibly. And as you can imagine, our customers, our retailers have a mandate to ensure that we trade responsibly. And what was really beautiful about yesterday's function was, you know, I asked the question when I did my regional, you know, welcome, and I asked how many of our customers has been trading for more than 20 years, you know, at the same time as me and the customers, you know, there was about half of the customers was more than 20 years. And there was a customer that's been in the trade for 56 years. And what was beautiful is most of the tavern owners was females. They've been running the businesses for 25 to 30 years. You know, they told some stories from starting many, many years ago without a license, where they then gone through the compliance to follow all the liquor laws. They got licenses and they started building the businesses. And a lot of these businesses has provided for their kids' universities, you know, for them to extend their houses. You know, there was a lot of beautiful stories about our customers, you know, that they've done well and they feel that they need to pay back to the communities. And there's a lot of our customers that sponsoring a lot of sports days, you know, school sports fields, club, you know, a lot of stuff that they contribute to their community, because we can only thrive as a company if our communities thrive.
And in those communities over the last 5 years, the SAB team has invested more than 500 million rand into those retailers in those communities and making sure that those businesses do well. Take me through, Jaco, just the importance of that investment. It's more than just saying we're going to give back to our retailers, to our clients, to our ecosystem. It strengthens the ecosystem and surely makes for a better business in the long term. Take me through some of those investment cases.
Jimmy, as you're aware, the last while has been tough, you know, with electricity and water and the basic things we need. And, you know, that number that you're speaking about is only for the last 5 years. You know, so it includes things like, you know, infrastructure upgrades into their businesses, as well as, you know, a massive amount of skills development that we're doing. So, for example, we upgrade the cameras around the business to ensure the safety of the patrons. You know, that's one of the some of the things we're looking at, so that at night there's a safer environment for people. We have also invested in age-gated Wi-Fi facilities that will enable the businesses to trade more efficiently. You know, we also invest in the actual infrastructure of the POC. We call it the POC. It's an outlet, a tavern, for example, where we spend money to make it a good experience. This, you know, for the consumer, you know, and through that we also, you know, we drive the growth, you know, for that specific POC, and then we basically use that investment from our side just to grow, you know, the communities, you know, the taverns, you know, from their side, so that they can give a great experience to their consumer. So we're all about the customer, we're all about the communities, and also we're all about the consumer needs. And through all of this investment, we've definitely looked at all of these aspects, and we've definitely enhanced it over the last 5 years. It's actually, yeah, so it'll be beautiful to show you if you're keen to come with me one day.
I'm always keen for a good trip, and for me, I think it's a different trip as well, given that the SAB business is a business that I'm quite familiar with. It's quite intertwined within the family that I've grown up in various ways, and certainly it has had that impact over the many, many years. Jaco, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts around where we go from here for the SAB business. 130 years is an awfully long time, and to be able to sit back and say we're not done yet, we're just getting warmed up and getting ready for another 130 years, what does that mean for the retailers out there and for the business that you look to continue to support?
Yeah, Jimmy, thank you. So from our side, we work very, very hard from our side to be a dependable supplier to our customers and our communities. I mean, we've been thriving for 130 years. You know, today, well, soon will be the first year of the next 130. We've got some great plans and initiatives, you know, in our plans for the long term. Obviously, everything is aligned to responsible trading. You know, building businesses that's responsible in the market, that does the right stuff, you know, so that there's no harm, but we get growth for our communities over the long term. where, you know, that money can be used for the specific areas to thrive and to grow those areas where our customers is. But as I said, you know, Jimmy, it's something that we will never, ever, ever take lightly. We have a lot of plans, our SAB Sharp campaigns around, you know, just around responsibility of all of us. I love SAB. I've worked there for many, many years. And I still dream of a world where there's no abuse of alcohol and where we play a big part in helping to get that better.
A responsible business, a business that cares about its communities and its ecosystems, and a business that isn't afraid to every now and then say cheers to its retailers, that is South African breweries, celebrating their retailers this week. Thank you so much to Jaco for those insights and for the time. Jaco Pereira, Vice President of Sales at SAB, joining us to take a look at how they continue to grow their business. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation, for 130 years and forever. SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, proudly brought to you by Volvo. It's safe to be brave with Volvo.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by Capitec, the business bank for everyone. It's SME time on a Thursday. It's always a privilege to be able to speak to small businesses that are doing exceptionally well in their spaces. And if we can do our little part in showcasing these businesses and help them do even better, then, well, this segment has done its job. This week's SME is the founder and CEO of a company called The Mushroom Box. Alec Scott joins me on the line to take a look at his business and what inspired it. Alec, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell me about The Mushroom Box. What do you do and how did it start? It sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me, firstly. And I'm excited to talk about The Mushroom Box a little bit more and like how we started and where we came from and what our mission is. So to answer your question, we started during lockdown back when we saw grocery stores run out of food for a little while. And luckily they restocked quite quickly. But, you know, a lot of people got a bit scared and started trying to grow their own food at home. But the thing you'll learn very quick once you start growing your own vegetable garden is veggies take an extremely long time to grow. And so this was when I saw there was a need for fast growing food. And mushrooms are the fastest growing food on the planet. They can grow to full maturity within 7 days. And so I decided, let me start a mushroom farm. And then, like, you know, within a year into that, load shedding happened. And that just completely destroyed the business. We couldn't keep our humidifiers and equipment running. And so I was like, how can I rather teach people to grow mushrooms at home? And so I did a little bit of research, put together some packaging and some designs, and the Mushroom Box was born.
So, Alec, you grow mushrooms in a box.
Indeed.
Is that right?
That's, well, we don't grow. We teach people to grow. So we provide you with the box, and you grow it at home.
So I can incorporate this into my existing vegetable garden. I can grow it on my kitchen counter. I imagine there's specifications on how, probably instructions as well, on how it's all done. Take me through the process of what happens after I get a box.
Absolutely. So once you get a box, you want to put it indoors in your kitchen, because we want to simulate the environment of where these mushrooms naturally grow, which is the forest. So they have tree canopies providing shade for the ground below. They have moisture from the soil. And we want to kind of just like keep that environment, you know, going. So once you receive your box, you put it in a good spot away from direct sunlight and wind and things that might dry up the mushroom. And you can cut the slits on the front. And it takes about 3 to 7 days roughly for the mushrooms to actually start protruding. And from the point they're actually like visible, then you can, you know, monitor them. If they look dry, you can spray moisture onto them. If they're growing long, that means they don't have enough oxygen. So you want to open a window nearby. And we go through this whole process on our website and through our email flow. So we keep our customers up to date with what's happening and how to monitor the mushroom organism.
Alec, can I grow any mushroom? Are there specific mushrooms? I imagine there might be different conditions for different types of mushrooms, but what does the box provide me with in terms of options?
Yeah. So great question. We have over 14 varieties and they stem from medicinal mushrooms, edible mushrooms. We don't have magic mushrooms, unfortunately. I have to let people down there. Yeah, in fact, our TikTok account just got banned for promoting magic mushrooms, which we don't do. They just confused us. And so, yeah, we deal with these problems all the time. Even our Facebook ad accounts have been taken down because they think we're selling magic mushrooms. And I want to clarify, these are purely edible mushrooms, as well as like some of the more favorite medicinal mushrooms like lion's mane, reishi, turkey tail, known for their cognitive benefits, anti-cancerous benefits, and that kind of thing.
So, Alec, if we've got the box, can I transplant the box? Can I move it? So you mentioned that there's indoor conditions and all of that for the initial growing. Can I then take the mushrooms as they start to bloom and perhaps move them somewhere else or move them into a bigger space? Can I use the box as a starter kit for a bigger garden of sorts?
That's a great question. So once you receive the box, it's actually ready to start growing. The mycelium has fully colonized the wood substrate inside and it's like ready to grow. So you cut the opening, you grow your first set of mushrooms. We advise customers to harvest before the spores drop, because if the mushroom drops the spores, then it's like, cool, we did our job, we spread our seed, and then it won't need to grow another set of mushrooms. So if you harvest it young, it hasn't dropped a spore, so it'll push out another mushroom within 2 to 3 weeks. And so, yeah, from that point, once you've grown your three flushes, you can take the mycelium out of the box. It will be much lighter, but you can take it out of the box and bury it in your garden. If you have a tree stump, that would be best, because the mycelium will go deep into the roots of that tree stump, bring up all the nutrients, and start flushing mushrooms from the top within about 3 to 6 months.
Okay, so I would be able to continuously grow from a single box. It sounds as though it might take a bit of time, but of course, that is what gardening is all about. I suppose it does result in a lot of patience and effort from the part of the gardener. Alec, let's look at the business side of the box and what it is that you're doing with the brand at the moment. I know you've mentioned that people can get access to the websites, and we'll get the website details in a bit, but take me through just some of the other business achievements that you've been able to achieve since building the business back in COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been 5 years and we've done a few things since then. One of the first things we did, which was quite notable, is we got into MasterChef SA. So we got a lot of coverage there and we got to let the chefs cook with our mushrooms, which I thought was really cool. Beyond that, we won gold for the Ecologic Award, which was hosted at the aquarium in Cape Town. That was really, really cool. And I got to speak to a whole lot of people and make a whole lot of connections. And most recently, we got into Pick and Pay. So we're going to be rolling out to 20 of the top Pick and Pays in the country, which I'm really excited about.
Exciting times lying ahead for the team at The Mushroom Box. That website for you folks, themushroombox.shop, if you're looking to get in touch with them. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Alec. That was Alec Scott, founder and CEO of The Mushroom Box, joining us for our SME of the week. This feature was brought to you by Capitec, the business bank for everyone.
Why pay more for business banking?
Does your account come with a private jet?
A 5-star lunch? A butler named James? Didn't think so.
At Capitec, you get the same low fees as personal banking, so you always know what you get and what you pay. Open your account in minutes and save up to 50% on transaction fees. Visit capitecbank.co.za to get started. Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP. 46669. Conditions apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This show was powered by Volvo plug-in hybrids. You don't need diesel power. You just need a second electric motor. So what are you waiting for? You're late for your test drive. It's safe to be brave with Volvo.
That's the show for the week, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, of course, you know they will be put up as podcasts and you can go and catch up on those in your own time. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news. He'll be followed very closely by Michael Abramson with the latest in top sport news. From my side, good night.